So I'm going to be talking about apostasy, the apostate church, this Sunday, next Sunday. I don't know if I'll go into three, but at least two Sundays on this. And obviously one of the important questions they ask in individuals, or even for yourself, is what does it mean by apostasy? How is that term to be understood by definition? But then what is the evidence of it? Those are the two main issues that we have to deal with. And then I want to give application. And of course that application will mainly come in the latter part of this series. So in order to understand what an apostasy is, the first thing we have to do is have a good definition. I'm going to have a general definition, and I'm going to have a specific definition. And in the general sense, apostasy means a deliberate abandonment of a formerly professed position and allegiance or a commitment. In order to have an apostasy, you have to have the authentic form. So Orthodox Christianity, within the ranks of Orthodox Christianity, you have historically those who have moved away within the ranks. They began within that realm, but have fallen from that. And there are mainline denominations, especially since the 1990s in the Western side, have just slipped away from that realm and have fallen into apostasy. So you have the general sense of apostasy. Apostasy has been taking place ever since the founding of the church. Certainly you find that there are heresies and false teachers and false prophets in the first century. In fact, of the last 17 writings of the New Testament, 15 deal with at least some form of heresy. When you get to Peter, Peter is talking about where they're going to be coming. When you get to Jude, Jude says they're here. And so you have specific texts that are devoted to false teachings and apostates that are there. And we'll look at some of the examples on this. And so we'll go to 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1. Here it says that the Spirit expressly says that in the latter times some will depart from the faith. Now, latter times, last days, is a term that has been misrepresentative by Christians. I don't know what you think of when I say last times or latter days. Or a lot of times people are thinking of an eschatological time frame, and specifically just before the time of the tribulation. And that's not what the term means. In fact, there are a number of terms synonymous with this term that simply means the first advent of Christ to the second advent of Christ. And then it also has an association with the last judgments that will incur at the end of the millennial era, and which are typically composed of what is called the Day of the Lord. Within this composition, you have the Day of the Lord, which has to do with God's eschatological judgments, but you have a specific time frame in which that will be ensued, called the area of the seven-year tribulation. And within that, there are different theologians, scholars, in regards to this area, in regards to when does that start. Some start at the beginning, some start at the middle part, some start in between the latter half of the 3.5 years or 7 years. So there's different people that place that time in different locations of that last set of those 7 years. Here, he's referring to the beginning of the advent of Christ, ongoing until his second advent. You're going to have this. And the closer that you get to that second advent, it will increase. I didn't finish verse 1 because I will as I get to that a little later in this series. The second thing that we can see in a general sense of abandonment of a former professed position, referring to an apostate, is in Acts chapter 20. This is a warning the apostle gave. Paul is on his way to Jerusalem. And now he's calling the elders of Ephesus to meet him in Miletus. We see that in verse 17. He goes on in his discourse with these elders, and he gives heed to them, warning to them. He tells them that he has not shunned to declare the whole counsel of God in verse 27, and therefore to take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which he has purchased with his own blood. And then this part. For I know this, that after my departure... Now, the Apostle Paul will die during the time of Nero's persecution. So he's going to die about 67-68 AD. He knows that after that time, in which you have the writing of Hebrews, Jude, 1 John, and the book of Revelation, he knows after his departure, there's going to be savage wolves that will come in, and they will not spare the flock. Also from among yourselves, men will arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away the disciples after themselves. Therefore, watch. So here he's telling about a general aspects of apostasy that will take place in the first century. Now, Israel has had an apostasy for many centuries, finally leading up to their captivity. And even today, Israel is still living in unbelief in the major construction of the nation of Israel. And so they are, in a sense, living apostate. But within the ranks of Christendom, you have those who have broken away from the true Orthodox Christianity. They still call themselves Christian, but they are not, because they are apostate. They leave the major doctrines of the truth. In fact, they dissect the scriptures and will not take it as a whole, as the Word of God, and isolate texts and socialize texts to come up with their schemes. 2 Peter in chapter 2. 2 Peter chapter 2, he says in verse 1 and following, there were also false prophets among the people, referring to the nation of Israel, even as there will be false teachers among you, referring to the dispersed people abroad that he's referring to within the church, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction, and many will follow their destructive ways, because of which the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness, they will exploit. In other words, they will do business with you with deceptive words. For a long time, their judgment has not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. Now, this has the idea of general apostasy that has historically been going on with the nation of Israel, that will incur in the church, and also leading up to the time of the specific apostasy, which I'll talk about in just a moment. And then there's Jude. Jude and chapter 3. In Jude 3 and 4. Now, these sections we'll go back and look at again as I make reference to them. In verse 3, you know, I've thought about this, the way he poses his introductory statement. Beloved, I was very diligent to write to you concerning our common salvation. Don't you just, there were times you just want to revel in your relationship with God and expound truth and things like this. But because in which the era in which we live, you have to speak on particular things that are facing the church. And that's exactly what Peter did. That's what Jude did. I want to talk this way. I really do. But I can't, because there are things that are happening in our environment and in the church that I have to deal with. I wish it wasn't that way. And so he says, I found it necessary to write to you, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith the faith, which has to do with the body of doctrine. Earnestly contend is agonizomai, the word where we get the word agonize. So you have to agonize in order to remain faithful to the truth. In other words, this is not a casual walk in the park for a Christian. There are too much contentious things in which he's addressing here that the Christian has to be very diligent and purposely pursuing in order that they are not going to be duped. Some time ago I was asked a question, could Christians be deceived? Absolutely. Galatians chapter 6, he says, he's writing, he says, do not be deceived. God is not to be mocked. What a man sows, that will he reap. And what he reaps to the flesh, that's what he's going to reap. If he sows to the Spirit, he will of the Spirit reap those things. So you can be deceived. In Matthew chapter 24, as Jesus begins to talk about, in regards to the questions that were posed to him about the destruction of Jerusalem, and leading up to the time of his second coming, he expresses four times, do not be deceived. Do not be deceived. And he tells you why, because they're going to be false ones. They're going to lead people away. He says, don't be deceived. Now, why would he tell believers that if they cannot be deceived? In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, in his beginning, one of his beginning introductions, before he gets to the specific falling away, the first thing he says is, do not be deceived. Again, why pose that to believers if the possibility is not there? So the general apostasy has existed, will continue, but it will continue to get greater, and darkness will get greater, and leading up to the what's called the specific apostasy. The specific apostasy is a mutual, not just in a certain individual or in a certain church or a denomination. This is a worldwide mutual falling away, abandonment of Orthodox Christianity. I referred to 2 Thessalonians 2, so that's the place that I wanted to go to, because he uses this term, hey apostasia, definite article, not general, but specific. There's a lot said here, and I would get into a rabbit trail if I start talking about those. So I'm purposely leaving it out because I want to deal with the apostasy itself. But the concern here, and obviously in every chapter of the first epistle, you have the idea of the parousia. With parousia, it's the Greek word that means the coming or the appearance of Christ for His church. Here he uses it in verse 1 of chapter 2. Now, brethren, concerning the parousia, the specific parousia, tais parousias is the word that he uses here, the specific coming of the Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to Him. So he's specific on that. Some people would use the term rapture to refer to that. Rapturo, the Latin expression. We also, you're not to be soon shaken in mind or trouble, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. The concern was that Paul had already written about these things in his first epistle, but there were those that are alarming these believers. Now remember, if you go back to Acts chapter 17, you will find that the church has been in persecution ever since the time that Paul gave the gospel there. In fact, he had to leave that area. And this church was facing great apostasy, but the word was going out into the entire world through this church. This church is to be lifted up. If you want to know how to deal with persecution, the writings that Paul gave to the Thessalonica church and Peter's writing in 1 Peter and 2 Peter are good ones to read. The book of Hebrews is also another one to read. Believe it or not, it's a good one to read in regards to persecution, because they give you directives and warnings and cautions to make sure that you're not moving away from truth and that you're aligning yourself steadfastly in the truth. Because if you're not, you will fall in a different direction. There is no such thing. There's no such thing in the Christian life of a plateau. You never arrive there. You're always growing. If you're not, if you say you're at a plateau, you'll begin to descend in your Christian life. There are too many expressions in the Bible with forcing verbs that talk about that. In fact, in Philippians chapter 3, I press on to the upper call of Christ in Jesus. Why did he say that? I'm being conformed to his life, and I'm suffering for the cause of that. Not that I've already attained it, but I press on. That whole motif is the Christian life, and not only that Paul had, that he expresses in his letters, as well as the other writers in the New Testament. And of course, Jesus as well, without a doubt. Now, your translations will either say the day of Christ and the day of the Lord, or the day of the Lord. Those are not the same thing. Let me just tell you right off now. The day of Christ has to do always in every single case, and it's used 8 times. It always refers to the parousia. It always deals with the Christ appearing before his church. And then there are other translations that you may have that say the day of the Lord. That's a different time frame. That is God's eschatological judgment on the world in regards to the rebellion against God. So the reason why you have those two different expressions is because of manuscripts. Depending on your text and what manuscripts they're going to be using will determine what phrase they're going to use there. But I tell you, there are two different time frames. So that affects, it actually affects the time frame of what follows. Had come. Perfect tense. It is here and it's ongoing in our midst. So he's either referring to the day of Christ, referring to the rapture that it would take place, or he's referring to the time of the eschatological judgment of God on the earth during that, in that time frame within the 7-year period. And that is the presupposition then to know when that happens. When will that happen? It will not happen, either one of those, depending on where you're going to accept your position. I love to press King James only people on this, because they are always pre-tribulationalists. And they have the day of the Lord in theirs. Or do they have the day of Christ in theirs? The day of Christ, if it deals with the rapture, it tells you that you're going into the tribulation. Emphatically here. Because he says, let no one deceive you for by any means, for that day. What day? Context tells you the day of Christ. That day will not come unless two things happen. Hei apostasia, the specific falling away, this is the worldwide falling away, comes first, and the man of sin is revealed. Man of sin is revealed in the middle of the tribulational period. How do you know that? Well, obviously, Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, tells you that the 7-day period there. And in the middle of the period, he breaks their covenant union with Israel. Within the first 3.5 years, he tells you there that they're allowed to have worship and sacrifices. So the temple and their offerings to God in the temple already instituted within that first 3.5 years. In the middle of that, he breaks that covenant and he solidifies it here. Because then he says that the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God and his worship, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now we have further understanding of this in Revelation chapter 13. So he's giving us a time reference based on either the day of the Lord or the day of Christ. And so depending on what position and what is actually accurate there. If the day of Christ is true, if it is the parousia, if it is the rapture of the church, then friends, you're going in the tribulation. I would be a liar and not true to the scriptures if I didn't say that. At the same time, this is your scapegoat, or my scapegoat, if it's the day of the Lord. That's the scapegoat. But if you're going to just be an only translated person to a particular translation, and you say you're a pre-tribulationist, you got a big problem here. And it's not a minor one, it's huge. He's giving time frame because the concern is they thought they were in that time. So in the first category, they thought they were left behind. In the second category of interpretation, they felt they were in the tribulation. You see the two issues that are facing, they're facing? And he's trying to address the concern. Well, that day won't happen until the worldwide apostasy is taking place and the man of sin is revealed. And so, it certainly didn't happen at that time. So they knew, we know for sure that the day of Christ did not happen at that time. We also know that the day of the Lord did not happen at that time in which he's writing. Note the perfect tense. Has come. Has come means it has come and it's ongoing. So it hadn't come. We're still waiting for it. Those two events. And so we have to realize that he's called the man of sin and he will have to be revealed. He's not revealed at the beginning, but he's revealed in the middle. And that's when he sets himself up and he will demand worldwide worship. This is why it's called a worldwide apostasy. The apostasy. Revelation chapter 13. The entire chapter is devoted to this character and the sequence of events that affect the entire world. So, he begins in verse 1, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea and I saw a beast." This is the Antichrist. "Rising up out of the sea, having seven heads, 10 horns. The idea of seven heads has to do with world-ruling entities historically from the time of Egypt going on. So you have, for example, you have Egypt, you have Assyria, you have Babylon, you have Greece, you have Medo-Persian, you have Greece, you have Rome. Then leading up to his time, the time of Antichrist, those are the seven national world entities that he's in reference to. Daniel refers to these in Daniel chapter 10, in chapter 4, in chapter 8. The 10 horns have to do with the confederate nations that align themselves up with this character, this person called Antichrist, referred to as the beast. And he has 10 crowns, diadems, on his head, and blasphemous names. Now the beast, the Antichrist, which I saw, was like a leopard. And I'm not going to expound all this. I just want to put some context here. Now the beast, which I saw, was like a leopard. His feet was like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like a mouth of a lion. And the dragon, now the dragon is defined by John in chapter 12, the previous chapter, and the dragon in verse 3 and in verse 9 is called the devil, Satan. So, and he will deceive the whole world, it says, in verse 9, previous of chapter 12. And so the dragon is Satan himself. And so it says that the dragon gave him power or authority, his throne, and great authority. Now he's not in Satan is not indwelling this person, but he's influencing them and allowed to give him authority. In the book of Revelation, there are two instances. Chapter 11 is one. I'm trying to remember the second one. Chapter 16, I think, is the other one. It refers to this person, the beast, the Antichrist, that he comes out of the bottomless pit. The bottomless pit is the abyss of demonic hordes. And he's released out of this demonic, out of this pit, and allowed to deceive the world. Satan is going to be working through him. That's a different spirit. And so here it says that the dragon gave him power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly head was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. And they, that is the whole world, worshipped the dragon, who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast. So synonymously you have the worship of the dragon, Satan, and also the Antichrist. So in view of the Antichrist, the worship of Satan himself. And it's going to be turned in that direction. The world is that. Man, the world has changed in such a way. Who would have thought in 2019, if someone would have told you what would have happened in 2020, that would have happened on a worldwide scale and affected the world the way it has? You're crazy. No way! I don't believe that was natural. I think it was unnatural. And that is just a small composition of what is ahead. This will affect the entire world, as the text will continue to say, in great extent. They will say, the world will say, who worshipped the dragon and gave authority to the beast, and they worship the beast saying, who's like this beast? Who's able to make war with him? Well, it's a rhetoric question, meaning no one. No one's like him. He was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. He was given authority to continue for 42 months. That's 3.5 years. That's the last part of the 7 years. And he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. And we already saw that the tabernacle is going to be affected here on earth. And he's going to be going after those who claim to be Christians. He's going to go after the nation of Israel. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given to him over every tribe, over tongues, every tongue, every nation. This is why it's called the apostasy. All who dwell on... So let me just correct something. So when people say, I think the apostasy is here. No, it's not here. You know it's not happening until the middle of the tribulational era. You know that. So what you're talking about is the general apostasy that's increasing leading up to that time. And then the specific apostasy worldwide will come in. So I just want to correct that. So when you talk about this, use the language correctly. He says that he has power over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, Antichrist, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, and every time that expression is used, especially here, because it's used repeatedly in the second chapter and the third chapter, and then he brings up this again. It means you better take heed. You better listen up. You better carry an action what I'm telling you. Remember, he begins the introduction of the letter in chapter 1 in verse 3. You're blessed if you read this and if you do it. You're blessed if you read it and you do it. So here he's saying you're going to be blessed because you don't want to go the wrong way. If anyone has an ear to hear, let him, he who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills will with a sword, must be killed with a sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Persecution, strongly. No question about it. Then another beast. This is the false prophet. That's going to promote. So religion is at the core of what's going to happen. This idea of separation of church and state, it's only a guise. It is certainly redefined. It's not, according to the founding fathers, here separation of church and state is no such thing. They're unified. I saw another beast coming up out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb. He spoke like a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast in his presence, causes, note that word, he causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. You can't, there's no option here. You have no option. Kind of like what's going on right now, you may not be able to travel unless you have certain identification of things. And notice, it's done in stealth. Because they know they have unconstitutional presence to do this. They know they cannot prevent you constitutionally to go down the street and to buy and to sell, or go to the next state to buy and sell and do business. It's against the Constitution. So they use the backdoor approach. What's the backdoor approach? You use major corporations to enforce it. Major corporations are enforcing it all over the world, and they're intensifying it to limit how you will travel and do commerce if it continues. If they're allowed to do that, and this is how they've been doing it, this is part of the stealthy way of doing things, the backdoor process. So we know we're not far away from all the possibilities from things. So these things will only ensue at greater and deeper levels until the time occurs. They're not going to get any less. They're going to ensue to greater and greater levels, wherever that time frame is. And so he says, he will cause them all to worship the first beast, the Antichrist, who was wounded and was healed. Some kind of an assassination or some kind of a death, and he supposedly resurrects as a counterpart to Jesus' resurrection. Hence, Antichrist. He's a false Christ. He's not the true Christ. He performs great signs, this false prophet, and he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. He deceives those who dwell on the earth. So deception is a great component to the great apostasy worldwide. He deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs, which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, the Antichrist, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to that image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause, there's that word again, cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So you have to surrender or do it. And by the way, just so you know, this is a place of no return. How can you say that? You're not God. You don't know that. I know I'm not God, but God says that. What do you mean he says that? In chapter 14. Okay, verse 9. Third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in his image and receives his mark on his forehead and on his hand, which is going to be subsequent to the reading that I just read in chapter 13, he himself shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out in full strength into the cup of his indignation, God's indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever. They have no rest day and night who worship the beast in his image and receive the mark of his name. There's a place of no return here. So you can't say, well, I'll just kind of, you know, I'll pretend and walk away from it. Two components are necessary. People get this confused. How do you know this will occur? Well, you already know that the Antichrist has set himself up as God. You already know that. The turning away. You already know the covenant that he has signed with Israel has been broken. They already had temple worship. You know that. So there are definite things you will know. In fact, it will tell you. Jesus said this specifically. On the abomination of desolation, which is when the Antichrist sets himself up in the temple. Let the reader know. He says specifically, you will know. The one that's reading this will know. There is no guessing here. Not only do you have to take the mark, you have to worship. They're simultaneous. It's worshiping specifically the entity associated with the Antichrist or the Antichrist himself. And in union with that, receiving this thing that he means the incision, can be translated that way, the karagoma is the word that he uses there, of a mark, an incision, the mark whereby he is associated in his name or the number of his name. Those things are simultaneous. A lot of people, it's amazing to me, I think it's the mark of the beast. Well, are you worshiping the beast when you take that thing? No. Well, that's not it. It may lead to that, but it's not it. Has Israel in covenant union with Antichrist, who is not going to be known as Antichrist? He's going to look at it as a good guy? And peace is going to be relative on the earth before sudden destruction occurs? That Paul refers to in 1 Thessalonians 5. Well, obviously those things haven't occurred. So, again, people have to align themselves up correctly with specific things that the Bible purposely aligns itself up with a time sequence. And so, we are being conditioned presently for things that are ahead. And so, those things will eventually, worldwide, will lead up to this thing. And it'll be like no-brainer to them. If I've already been doing certain things with commerce, and this is the only way I can do commerce, it makes no sense not to do this. You see what I'm saying? So people will be conditioned. This has historically been done in the past, but this is going to be at a greater level and a greater depth. And at the cost of the souls of individuals. Damnation. So we have to realize that within these two frames, you have a general apostasy that has been taking place since the church conception. It continues. It will continue to get bigger and deeper and wider, leading up to the time of the specific apostasy at the middle of the tribulation and following through for those 42 months. So we have to realize that these things are specific. Jesus made a statement in Luke 18, verse 8. And I think it's worth noting in view of this. He says, when the Son of Man comes, will he find teapostin? Will I find the faith on the earth? And the idea of the faith goes back to the idea of the correct doctrine and association with Christ himself. His gospel, the word of God, the testimony that is here. You notice that in chapter 12 of the book of Revelation, the victors. The victors are victors because they are true to the testimony of Jesus and through the blood of the Lamb. They overcome, it says. They overcome what's taking place by the blood of the Lamb and their testimony. What testimony do they have? Their life is reflecting a life in Christ. Friend, if you're willing to give up on less value things today, how much greater will you give up at a greater cost with things in the future? It's just like the frog in the kettle. The frog never knew. Because it was a slow increment thing in the kettle with the water that eventually led to his demise. He never knew it. The climate slowly adjusting to comfortability. The body making the adjustments. Again, another degree. And so on and so on and so on. So we have to realize that there is a process. Jesus' concern was the faith. The idea then is that the greatest amount of the world will go in deception. That will sell their souls, if you will, to the Antichrist. It will be the lesser that will be found to be true. Hence the idea, when I come back to the earth, well, I find the faith. So it suggests that when he comes back, it will be like the time of Noah. Now, I know the conditions of Noah have some specific meaning in the account that Jesus gives in regards to this, that it has to do with people who are not prepared. And that's the main context of what he says there. But there are other underlining principles that are also true. Why are they not prepared? Because they've been conditioned. Or they don't believe the truth. They believe the impossibility of what you're talking about. Now, what about you? Let's say we're in 2019. And someone is telling you about this is going to happen in 2020. Obviously, they don't go believe them because the Bible doesn't tell us the day or time in which the coming of Christ specifically comes. But we know the era by which he comes, the season by which he comes. And so, if we, unbeknownst to us, could not understand what would have happened in 2020 if someone would have told us in 2019, how much so after the working of deception has incurred at a greater levels will people absolutely not be concerned? That is the thing about Noah's ark that is the most alarming, because he told them that something's going to happen that's never happened before. A flood. Flood? We haven't even had rain. In fact, is rain even in the dictionary at our time? No. How can you even talk about rain? Inevitably flood? Does not make sense. And that's the same thing that's going to happen here. People are going to say, watch out, rain's coming. But this rain's a different rain. It's designed for a deluge to destroy. Oh, come on. It's not going to happen. And then it happens. In Matthew chapter 24, and I'll just finish with this, Matthew 24. Verse 9. They will deliver you up to tribulation, kill you, and you'll be hated by all nations. Christians are hated today. There's more persecution going on in the world today than ever before. Missiologists had already given us the prognostics of this back in the 1990s. They already saw this. But it's at unprecedented levels today. And it's coming to your town. You already called haters by many. This will be a worldwide effort to go after you and to me. And then many will be offended, will betray one another and hate one another, and many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. Now, when lawlessness, this is part of the deception. When we accept things that are outlawed by God, it hardens the heart. Because you're already accepting untruth. You consider this to be acceptable, get over it, this is the way it is. That is how it also works in deception, and you don't even know it. You'll be forced in your workplaces, in commerce of all levels, in traveling, and everything. Is this important to talk about? Or are you going to wait till it happens? Are you one of these guys that says, well, I'm going to wait till the rapture? Wait, if it's already going to be happening before that, at greater levels of increments, you don't have time to wait. If you don't know what you're going to do, And you may not know everything what to do, but you better know the right things. The things that are really going to make the most important. God has given us these things so that you are not deceived. So we have to be a perceptible people. The last thing he says here is in verse 24. For false Christs and false prophets will arise to show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand.